My girls are 14 and 16, and back in the day when they were born, it was not easy to share photos and videos with loved ones. But now you have a fantastic option available, the Family Album app. The Family Album app was created in 2015 and has operated over the long term to give parents a secure and easy way to share photos and videos with loved ones. It's a totally secure personal haven for your family's memories. I love that it's private with no unwanted eyes. Now let me share some of the great features that make Family Album a go-to app. First off, the app automatically sorts photos and videos by month, allowing you to swipe back in time and see how your child has grown. No more scrolling through endless feeds or searching through folders. Another cool feature of the Family Album app that I love is that you can order 11 free photo prints every month to be delivered to your home starting in August. It's really nice to have some tangible pictures to hold onto or share to document each month of your baby's life. Plus, the Family Album app has unlimited storage and it is totally free. Yes, you heard that right. No more worrying about running out of space when you're just trying to relive those heartwarming moments. So if you're still trying to use other messaging apps for your kids' photos, it is time to level up your family photo game with a free photo sharing app. Head over to the App Store today, search Family Album, it's all one word, download the app, and start creating a legacy of love one photo at a time. In this birth story episode, you are going to hear about a lovely birth center birth. Welcome to the All About Pregnancy and Birth podcast. If you're having a baby in the hospital, you are giving birth in a system that too often takes away power from women over what happens in their own bodies. I'm Dr. Nicole Calloway Rankins, a practicing board-certified OBGYN who's had the privilege of helping well over 1,000 babies into this world. I've been a doctor for over 20 years, and I'm here to help you take back your power, advocate for yourself, and have the beautiful pregnancy and birth that you deserve. This podcast is for educational purposes only, and it's not a substitute for medical advice. Check out the full disclaimer at drnicolerankins.com/disclaimer. Now let's get to it. Hello there. Welcome to another episode of the podcast. This is episode number 267. Whether this is your first time listening or you've listened before, thank you for spending some of your time with me today. In this birth story episode, we have Katie. Katie lives on a ranch in Northern California with her husband Connor, her daughter Rowan, and son Elias. They moved there just after her daughter was born, and she's been really lucky to be able to stay home with her children. Prior to having kids, she worked in early childhood education with a focus on nature-based and outdoor education. We're going to hear about Katie's second birth. She calls it an amazing birth experience, night and day from her first. Her first birth experience was the standard hospital birth, a group of OBs, an epidural, and it wasn't until she got pregnant with her second baby that she really began to process her first birth. Her first labor and birth were fine, but this time she wanted a more supportive, intimate and holistic prenatal experience, so she chose to give birth at a private birth center with a group of amazing midwives. She felt the midwifery route was incredible, empowering. Her midwives offered a safe space for her to be vulnerable. She ultimately had an unmedicated water birth with totally spontaneous pushing. She described the whole thing as an incredible experience, and you are going to hear all about it in this episode. I don't usually share birth center birth stories on the podcast because I don't know much about birth center birth. For this podcast, I tend to stay in my lane, so to speak, which is hospital birth, and share hospital birth stories. But as I want to do more to improve our U.S. maternal health care system, I need to learn more about different types of birth experiences. And I learned a lot from this birth center episode, and I know that you will too. Now, before we get into the episode, do come join me in my next live class, Make a Birth Plan the Right Way. The class is totally free. In it, you're going to learn how to make a birth plan that actually works to help you have the birth that you want. You can sign up for the next live class at drnicolerankins.com/birth plan. Okay, let's get into this birth story episode with Katie. Thank you so much, Katie, for agreeing to come onto the podcast. I'm excited to have you share your story. This is going to be a little bit different because you actually didn't give birth in the hospital, but we're getting to all those details in a minute.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me. I'm super excited. I listened to your podcast throughout both of my pregnancies, so I'm excited to be here.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that. I appreciate that. So why don't you start off by telling us a bit about yourself and your family?
Sure. My name is Katie, and I live up on the northern coast of California in Humboldt County with my husband, Connor, and our two littles, Rowan. My daughter is 2.5, and my son, Elias, is just about to be 6 months old.
Okay. All right. And do you work at all, or are you, or I should say outside of the home?
Yeah, no, I'm actually home with the kids now, but I was in early childhood education for years. And so, and I actually was sort of focused on nature-based outdoor education, and moving up here is, you know, it's redwoods, beach, ocean, beautiful. So it's kind of fun to raise my kids in this area.
Oh yeah, that's pretty cool. That's pretty cool. And I always have a soft spot in my heart for people who are in education, because I know from my mom being a teacher for 50 years, my sisters were both educators. It's a tough spot to be in.
So. It is. Yeah. Yeah.
It's... So love to. It's challenging, to say the least. All right. But why don't we start off? This, like I said, this is going to be a little bit of a different birth story, because this is about your second birth, and you gave birth in a birth center for that birth.
Yes.
But in order to understand how you got to that, then let's tell us a little bit about what happened with your first birth.
Sure. So my first birth, I would say, was just a very standard hospital birth. You know, my prenatal care was through, an OB practice. There were five OBs sort of rotating, you know, throughout my pregnancy, and I would see someone different each time. And then the birth was, you know, it, aside from giving birth, it was nothing super exciting. You know, we went to the hospital. I ended up getting an epidural, had pushed for an hour. The baby was super healthy. The labor and delivery nurses were wonderful. I guess it was just kind of somewhat predictable. There was nothing traumatic about it or anything like that, but it was just kind of what you would think of when you think of a sort of a standard hospital birth.
Okay. So it's not that anybody was mean, or you had any challenges or difficulties?
No, you know, I will say I didn't really start processing my first birth until I got pregnant again with my son. And I mean, until I got pregnant again with my son, I really loved my prenatal care, and I loved my hospital birth. I just sort of started thinking more about, well, what was missing there, and kind of what I really wanted. And I had realized that there were moments I started remembering, like I really wanted to chat with my doctor about my birth preferences. And there was something inside me that was just really intimidated to do so. I remember I had a doula for my first birth.
Okay.
And she was fantastic. And she kind of helped me work through that. Like, you know, she told me just to write it down, and, you know, so I just can read the questions off to my doctor. But yeah, there were just these little moments that I started thinking back on of, you know, what do I want to do differently this time around? And I realized that most what I was craving was more of a community and a more holistic experience. It was kind of, we were still somewhat in the COVID guidelines, so my husband couldn't come to any of the ultrasounds. So he was sort of left out of the loop there. And yeah, so it was, I would say it was fine. But what I realized was I could have more than fine. I think that I wanted to have something a bit more community-based.
Gotcha. And by community, did you mean community of other pregnant women or community, or just feeling like there was more connection with your prenatal care provider? What do you mean by community?
Yeah, more connection with my prenatal care provider, more, I think more just kind of tapping into the emotional side of this, mm-hmm. of just this big journey of, mm-hmm. of pregnancy and birth, and, you know, bringing my husband along and really making him feel part of it, like we're doing this together. And I honestly didn't even know where to look mm-hmm. for this. I just knew that's kind of what I wanted. I wanted women around me. The doctor that, you know, delivered my firstborn was a man, and which was fine. He was fine. But again, right, it's just kind of right. fine. I really wanted something that, yeah, just felt very, I was craving that sort of more of excitement and really getting into the true experience and how you're feeling and what you truly want for this experience. Because I would say with my first birth, it almost felt like you gave birth and that was it. And I kind of just wanted it to be a little bit more magical, sure. I guess, is what I was kind of looking for.
Okay. So then how did you end up deciding to go with the practice that you went with? And the model that you went with?
Yeah. So I was at a play group with my daughter, and I was talking with a friend. I was really early on in my pregnancy, and I had already gone to get sort of the initial blood work and ultrasound done at sort of a similar practice that I had done before. Mm-hmm. And that just kind of sealed the deal in my mind. Like, you know what? I really want something different. And like I had said, I didn't know what that really meant, but I was sort of expressing this to a friend, and she said, well, you should go through this birth center where she had delivered her baby. And then kind of within the next 10 minutes, a few more women started chiming in like, oh, sorry to interrupt, but yes, I loved this place too. And oh, I had a really good experience too. And so that sort of opened up the world of a birth center to me. I had kind of always thought that it was either hospital birth or home birth. I didn't really know much about what a birth center birth or prenatal care was. I didn't know much about the midwifery philosophy, but I did know just by chatting with these women that it was a group of 3 or 4 midwives, and it was a very holistic experience. And it just really sparked my interest. And so I ended up giving them a call and doing sort of a consultation, and they really walked us through what it means to give birth at a birth center. You also had the option to do a home birth with them, but we live out in the middle of nowhere, and it just made me a little nervous.
Sure. So
I did end up doing the birth center. And yeah, they walked us through everything. They kind of gave us a tour of the facility, which was absolutely beautiful and so peaceful, and just felt like you were in a bedroom. Like, it was just really, really calming and natural. And then they kind of walked us through the financial aspect of it, and it was pretty immediate that both Connor and I were like, yeah, this is where we're going to go.
Okay. So you brought up the financial aspect.
Yeah.
Was it covered at all by your insurance?
So it was interesting because, my insurance, there was like a portion of it that you could get covered with a birth center, mm-hmm. but because we live in sort of like a rural area, this birth center was, you know, not in my network, but they had a biller that worked directly with, from the birth center to the patients, which was really helpful. And she basically said, well, this is the only birth center in this region, so you can apply for what they call as a gap claim that basically says, hey, there's no other option. So they allowed us to do the in-network sort of insurance plan. So I got about 60% of it covered, which was great. But it was kind of nice because we just paid everything up front and we just knew that was it. So that sort of took a lot of that insurance complication out of it.
Sure. Well, that's nice that they helped you figure that out and how to decrease the cost.
Yeah. Well, and you know, it's so confusing with all the insurance.
It's so confusing. Like I've been a physician for 20 years. I don't understand it.
Yeah.
I have yelled many times on with insurance companies. It's like they purposely make it difficult.
They do.
Yeah. I mean, completely difficult. So do you mind giving us a range of about how much it costs? And you're in California, so I take it may be a little bit more expensive.
Yeah, so we're in California. So for the whole thing, and that covered all of the prenatal appointments, everything that having to do with the birth, five postpartum appointments, and then just anytime you wanted to chat, anytime you wanted to come in or whatever you needed, the whole thing cost roughly about $7,000. But we got, you know, about half of it back, which was, yeah. So it was actually a lot more doable than I had originally thought.
That's also a lot cheaper than a hospital birth. Like a lot cheaper.
Yes, I know. I mean, I did all of my blood work and ultrasounds and stuff outside of the birth center, you know, which was just covered by standard insurance. But yeah, so it was sort of a win-win in all aspects.
Okay. In my family, we prioritize sitting down and having dinner together every single night. But finding the time to plan meals, do the shopping, and cook from scratch can feel overwhelming. That is where Gobble comes in. Gobble is a meal kit delivery service where each week you can choose from their rotating menu of over 18 gourmet meals. You can mix and match from classic recipes, lean and clean recipes, and vegetarian options, and Gobble will deliver them right to your door. We recently had a Gobble meal of Baja-style fish tacos with green goddess cabbage slaw and spiced black beans. Hear me when I say it was delicious. And that's because Gobble menus are designed by professional chefs. You'll experience a huge range of global flavors and fun gourmet ingredients that make you feel like a pro chef without making a single trip to the store. The meal was super easy to come together because most of their meals only take about 20 minutes. And did I mention how good the chocolate chip cookies were for dessert? See what a difference Gobble will make for your household. Right now, they're offering my listeners a fantastic limited time deal. Get $120 off across four boxes, plus free shipping and free cookies. Go to gobble.com/Dr. Nicole. That's gobble.com/Dr. Nicole today. This offer is not available on their home site, so don't miss out. So then tell us about what was your pregnancy and prenatal care like, and then how did that compare to the care you have for your first pregnancy?
Yeah, so I would say my prenatal care was absolutely incredible. I had a rough pregnancy, and we can talk a little bit more about that. But I will say that if I had been anywhere else, I think that it would have been much, much harder to get through. But yeah, my prenatal care. So like I said, we went through a birth center and there were three midwives who were all amazing. Like, I just love them. I just wanted them to be in my life forever. Like, I still email them and just like send them photos because they're so sweet. And I remember my first appointment, your first appointment when you go is about 2 hours because they just want to get to know you. They were asking all of these questions about our family, how Connor and I met, you know, really processing through the first birth. And I remember saying, you know, I remember at one point they were like, sorry, this is taking so long. And Connor and I looked at each other and we're like, we feel like we're on like a date. Like, this was just so fun. Like, we were just sitting on the couch chatting. And so, you know, and that just was sort of how it felt throughout the whole journey. Every appointment was an hour long and we really dove into everything in terms of the medical side to how are you feeling, you know, even just kind of the language that they would use just made you feel really, really comfortable. One thing that kind of stands out in my mind is they never required you to take your weight. They were just very aware that that can be triggering to some people. And so their first question was kind of, you know, what's your relationship with your body? What's your relationship with food? And sort of that's sort of how they presented a lot of these, what could be sensitive subjects to some people. So they just instantly made you feel really comfortable. And which was just much different than my first birth or my first experience. It was much more, you know, in, out. Like I said, I was a little bit intimidated to ask those questions. Where here, I really felt like I could dive into any type of fears that I had, any type of questions, any sort of feelings that I was going through. They were just very, very willing to listen and offer factual insight. And so I really loved it. It was just a very comforting space to be in, just being pregnant and vulnerable and figuring out what life is going to be like with a newborn and a 2-year-old. And, you know, they were just really there for all of that. And yeah, it was just really wonderful.
It sounds amazing. Yes.
Yeah.
It sounds like it was just absolutely wonderful.
Yeah.
Yeah. So then what about your pregnancy was difficult?
So my pregnancy, you know, it started off, my first trimester felt pretty normal, similar to my first pregnancy. Nausea, you know, just kind of feeling that like ugh in your stomach throughout the day, but nothing too out of the ordinary. And I was sort of waiting to get into the second trimester thinking like, okay, once the second trimester comes, it sort of calms down, thinking that it was going to be sort of the same as my first. But as I kept sort of, as I kept going in my pregnancy, I just was continuing to be really tired. The nausea subsided, but I was just super, super tired and sort of equated it to, I have a toddler, mm-hmm. you know, I'm just tired in general. But I was just noticing too, like I was just really swollen and I was getting bigger than I had prior to my first pregnancy. But again, all of this, I was like second pregnancy, everything's different. You know, it's all kind of, you just never know. You know, you never know what's going to happen. But I went in to the birth center, I think it was at like 28, 29 weeks for my screening for gestational diabetes, which they just did the finger prick. Mm-hmm. And a couple of days later, that came back somewhat high, which, you know, my midwife said, don't worry about it. Sometimes it can just, depends on what you ate that day, whatever, but let's go and get you an appointment to do the fasting glucose test. So I went in, I did that, and of course I'm starting to get a little bit anxious. I don't really know much about gestational diabetes, but also in the back of my mind, I'm like, I didn't have it before. It's fine. And so I do the test, I go home, and then I'm like constantly refreshing the results page of my, you know, of my profile and like, oh my gosh, okay, let's go. And it comes in, I see it before my midwife diet does, and my numbers are very high, which indicates that I had tested positive for gestational diabetes. And it was a huge shock. I immediately went through every single possible emotion. You know, like I said, I didn't know much about it. So shame, guilt, fear, all of those emotions just sort of came rushing in. Like, what does this mean? How did I do this? You know, I think I'm a fairly healthy person. You know, I didn't have it with my first pregnancy. Mm-hmm. Oh my gosh, have I been eating too much like mac and cheese? Like, you know, like all this stuff just starts really flooding in. And I just go down the rabbit hole. You know, I'm Googling everything and all I'm seeing is the risks to yourself, the risks to your baby, hip dysplasia. You know, 50% of women could end up having type 2 diabetes after birth, all of these sort of red flags. And I just really didn't know how to process it. And you know, when you're not educated on something like this, you go to the worst.
Sure.
So I call my midwife and she sees the numbers and, you know, she's very calm. She says, yes, they're high. And, you know, this does indicate that you have gestational diabetes. Come in tomorrow and we'll figure out a plan. don't go down the rabbit hole. And I was like,
too late,
but I'll stop. Yeah. Yeah. Damage has been done. So my husband is I'm just this emotional wreck, and he's very like, okay, let's figure out, let's make a spreadsheet, let's put down all the stuff we need to buy for this diet, let's do all this, you know, really trying to fix the problem, and which is so sweet, but I'm just still in this state of like, we can't fix the problem, this is where I am, I'm so overwhelmed, you know. So that night was a little bit overwhelming. But the next day I went in and was immediately met with just, it's okay. My midwife gave me a hug. She looked at me. She's like, this sucks. I know this sucks, but it's fine. I promise you, we will get through this together. Let's go in. Let's talk. So we went into the appointment room, and we just started chatting, and she just sat next to me and was like, okay, here, this is what it is. So my first question was, is my baby okay? How does this affect my baby? And, you know, she was like, your baby is fine. This is why we do these tests before at this stage, because whatever is happening has not yet reached a stage to where it could affect your baby. So she just started going through the facts and how we're going to get through this. So basically from that day on throughout my pregnancy, I had to get a glucose monitor, and I pricked my finger 4 times a day. So I did a fasting when I woke up, and then an hour after every meal, recorded it, did all this, recorded what I ate along with those meals. And the goal was to have 80% of your numbers had to be within range to keep you out of any type of other intervention, insulin or whatever medication might have to come along with that.
Gotcha.
So I was really just at that moment, I was like, okay, we can do this. So I just decided, I'm going to just get this under control. I'm going to do the diet. I'm going to exercise. This is just, I'm doing it. So basically from then on, it was, I cut out all sugars, all carbs, which is like in your third trimester, like all you want is a burger or not have to think about what you want to eat. You just want to grab and go. So It was challenging because, you know, I really had to think the night before, what am I going to eat the next day? But in hindsight, it was a little bit of a blessing because I felt so much better once I started, going on this diet, and I started exercising 30 minutes a day. And within a couple of weeks, I just felt better. My swelling went down. My energy was back. Obviously I wish I hadn't have had gestational diabetes, but it really sort of put a new perspective on the pregnancy, and that I could take control of how I felt. And there were moments of just feeling really overwhelmed. Like I just wanted to be done. It took me a little bit to get over the embarrassment of it, I guess, just because I don't think a lot of people know about it. And so when I would say that I have gestational diabetes, or I would just like not eat the pastry or whatever for the first few weeks, because there was still some weird stigma that sat with me that it was embarrassing. And I don't know why, it just sort of felt that way. But the moments I would get overwhelmed, I remember my midwife telling me that, and this is good to know for anyone who goes through gestational diabetes, is if you have gestational diabetes and you have it under control through diet and exercise, you are no different than a pregnant woman who doesn't have gestational diabetes in terms of your risk. So as long as it's under control, diet and exercise, you really are okay. The baby is totally fine. So I just kind of kept that in the back of my mind that if I could keep this under control, I'm no risk. I don't have a high risk pregnancy if I can really keep it under control.
Definitely. Definitely. And I take it you were able to continue to, you never had to get on medication.
I never had to get on medication. You know, within the first, I think it was like maybe 8 weeks or so, I did the prick every 4 times a day. And then because my numbers were starting to, you know, were starting to show that, you know, it was under control, I could kind of start cutting back on the finger prick. But, you know, when we started chatting about it, she was like, for the first couple weeks, just experiment, because some people can eat rice and their blood sugars are fine. Some people it spikes. So she told me to kind of experiment with everything. But I was just, no, I went cold turkey and I cut everything that could potentially spike my sugars. I'm just going.
Oh, well, I'm glad then. And I guess I should ask if you needed to have medication, would you have had to not be at the birth center anymore?
Yes. So that was another, you know, sort of motivator for me to really try to keep it under control, is because that was a risk out factor. There are a few things that risked you out at the birth center, and mm-hmm. that would have been one of them. And so that was a big motivation to, you know, to try my best to,
sure.
to stay under control.
Sure. Sure. Okay. All right. So let's talk then about your birth. Was there anything that you felt like what did you do to prepare for your birth? Or did you even feel like you had to do anything to prepare?
Yeah, no, I did. I listened to a lot of visualizations and meditations on this app called Gentle Birth. It was super, super helpful. It was really, I had sort of read the hypnobirthing book, but for some reason it never really clicked with me. I couldn't really use those visualizations. I felt they were just a little complicated, but this app was really wonderful because it went through visualizations for contractions, visualizations for actually pushing, how to breathe during this time, how to, you know, all these different sort of opportunities to take a moment and relax. And so that was a really good app that I used. I went to pelvic floor therapy this time around, which was really, really helpful. Yeah, I had a little bit of prolapse from my first birth. And so that was something that I really wanted to work on and make sure that, you know, everything was strong and I sort of knew what was going on. So that was super, super helpful for my prenatal. Mm-hmm. And then I also went to a prenatal lactation consultant, which didn't really prepare me for the birth itself, but it really, we got on a plan for like immediately after and sort of what I could do before giving birth to sort of help my supply. I had trouble with my first nursing, and so that was something that was really important to me.
Gotcha. All of that makes perfect sense.
And then of course listening to your podcast. Yeah.
Well, awesome. So was there anything that you particularly wanted for your birth?
Yeah, I mean I wanted, like I had said, I wanted just women around me. That was really important to me. I wanted my mom there. She wasn't able to be there for the first. I wanted to catch my baby. That was a big thing. I wanted a water birth and I wanted to be able to catch my baby. And, you know, just sort of, I wanted the delayed cord clamping and the skin to skin.
Yeah.
Which is all standard practice in midwifery care. And yeah, I think, you know, I just wanted to feel held, I guess.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I wanted an unmedicated, but that also was just the, you know, I wanted unmedicated, but that also was like, you had to have unmedicated when you give birth at the birth center. So.
Yeah. You don't really have a choice in a birth center. And I should ask, did you want unmedicated for your first?
Yeah.
And then that didn't happen, or?
I did want, yeah, I wanted an unmedicated for my first birth. I, But I just ended up, I think, around 7 or 8 centimeters. I was like, I'm ready for the epidural. And I got the epidural. And I will say, as much as I wanted an unmedicated birth, and that did play into the birth center a little bit, it wasn't why I chose the birth center. It was actually, I wanted more of that, like I had said, that sort of holistic, women-driven sure. sort of feeling. And the unmedicated aspect of it just sort of came along with it. I was kind of fearful of it. You know, I didn't do it for my first birth. And a lot of this sort of throughout my prenatal was preparing for that and just trusting that I can do it and that, you know, the people around me are going to support me through that.
Yeah. 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 So then was there anything else you were afraid of when you thought about giving birth at the birth center or birth in general?
I mean, there were the little things of, you know, what would happen if I had to get transferred to the hospital in the case of any type of emergency. I also was a little bit fearful about once the baby is born, there's a potential for the baby to have hypoglycemia because of my gestational yep. diabetes. So there was that sort of fear of, you know, that it was just an unknown that I was sort of having to process through.
Okay. Did they have a transfer plan in place for you?
Yeah. So we spent a lot of time talking about any type of situation of why or when you would get transferred to the hospital. They were very clear that, you know, they were like, we have no ego in this. We are very, very, you know, we are constantly checking. If we see anything that makes it seem like you should be at a hospital or getting a different type of support, we take you. They, you know, they're like, we can really count in 30 years how many times we've actually had to call the ambulance because they're just so in tune and really, really making sure that it doesn't get to that point. But what was, you know, if you do have to go to the hospital, they continue their care for you. The only thing that they can't do is actually deliver the baby, but they do their best to sort of keep your birth preferences and really advocate for sure. you. And, you know, there are a lot of people who sort of get to a point in their labor and decide to go to the hospital to get the epidural, and they go with you and they help you through all of that. So
gotcha.
We felt very in the know.
Good, yeah. good. So then what was your labor and birth like?
Yeah. So, I went in on my due date and I got my membrane sweeped. And it was about 2.5 centimeters dilated. Mm-hmm. And, so I went home and I didn't really feel anything. I felt kind of a little bit crampy, but nothing that really was, hey, this is starting. But I went home, got through that night, went through the whole next day. And about 7 o'clock that night, I started feeling just super, super mild. Like I was talking like this. No one even knew that anything was happening, but I just kind of started clocking it. And the reason I should say too, my first birth, I was 2 minutes from the hospital, and so I was able to labor at home for a long time. This birth, I was an hour from the birth center, and I also live, like I said, kind of out in the middle of nowhere. So that was a big part of our plan, and my midwives were like, if your water breaks, you come in immediately. But they were just like, we don't need you to labor at home. You just come in.
Sure.
Just because, you know, second births can be kind of wild too. You don't really know what's going to happen with your second as much. So that's kind of why I started clocking these, like, oh, okay. I probably wouldn't even have paid attention to them, mm-hmm. but, I put my daughter to bed and I realized, oh, they're like coming every 10 minutes. And I thought, well, okay. So I called my midwife and she said, well, you are, you know, overdue, so this isn't nothing, but why don't you just hop in the tub? Because usually taking a bath can sort of calm them down and see if they're continuing. And if they're continuing, why don't you just come in, you can take a nap, you know, just make the journey up here. So around 9:45, I started, they just were continuing to be pretty consistent. So, you know, we got ready. We called my mother-in-law to come stay with my daughter, and my husband and I drove to the birth center. My mom followed. And when we were in the car, they started kind of amping up. We were still kind of joking and talking, and I had my gentle birth meditations on. I had my like eye mask on, and I was just trying to be calm and just getting through it. But it was nothing. I definitely wasn't in active labor, but I was having those little contractions. And so we got to the birth center around 10, and it could not have been more different. Like, my midwife and the birth assistant, who's so wonderful too, like opened the door. There was like candles, and they were just like, come on in, let's get you into bed. And there was like plants, and like, just, it was just so beautiful. And they got me in bed, and, you know, we brought our food, put it in the kitchen. And by this time I was having, you know, I was definitely having to sort of stop and breathe through my contractions, but then just kind of go about my conversation. And so she checked me, and I was about 5.5 centimeters when I got there. And yeah, so I was like, okay, this is great. We're going to do this. This is just going to go, I'm going to have this baby, and it's going to be just so beautiful. And, you know, they kept coming, and my midwife was like, well, she just kept encouraging me to just relax and just take this time, because, you know, it's going to get more intense. So while you can, try to sleep, try to rest. I was a little bit antsy. Like, I kind of wanted to get up and like walk around and get it moving, but she kept sort of nudging me, like, get back in bed, just take a minute. So I finally decided, okay, I'm just going to get in bed. It was just, you know, it was like a regular sized king bed. And then there was a couch that my mom was hanging out on. And I didn't sleep that night. I labored throughout the night to the point where, you know, I would have to get out of bed to sort of get on my hands and knees, and, you know, my contractions were amping up a little bit. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, my midwife came in and said, you know, I think it was around like midnight, she checked me again, and nothing had progressed, but it had only been a couple of hours. And then again at 3, she checked me, and still no movement. And there was talk about like, well, we could eventually talk about like breaking your waters if you wanted, but you're still okay right now. Let's just keep this going. And I remember at one point her coming in and being like, wow, this is just such a gentle birth. And I was like, oh, ding, ding, that's like my app. So, you know, it kind of kept going that way. Like, I would sort of be able to sleep, and then I would get up and I would have a contraction and rest again. And then around 6 a.m., my other midwife came. So the one that was there could go home. And, you know, she was like, it sounds like you haven't really slept. I was like, no. So she gave me a little like sleep tincture. It was just different, like essential, I'm not really sure what it was, but okay. Herbs and stuff like that. And I was able to, And I was able to fall asleep for about 45 minutes. And when I woke up, I was like, wow, you know, that was great. I don't remember if I had a contraction. Maybe I did. I couldn't remember. And we just started talking. And then I started realizing like, oh, I haven't had a contraction for a little while, like maybe 15 minutes. And then it was like every 20 minutes I would have one, and then every 30 minutes, and then it would like come, and then it would fade away, and it would come, and it would fade away. And I, you know, and she was like, you know, I'm noticing that you're not really having as many sensations. And so she gave me another tincture, which is like, was supposed to sort of help induce contractions. Another kind of set of herbs, mm-hmm. and it tasted really horrible, but, But, you know, I took it and it kind of sort of helped. I had another one, but it just like, it's basically my labor stopped. Like it just stopped. And I had, you know, I had been laboring all night. So I was just, okay, didn't really know what was going on. And she said, well, why don't you, you know, let's just, you're still fine. You know, I don't want to break your water because there's no reason to. And once we break your water, you're sort of on this time frame of more potential for intervention and all of that. And so she said, why don't you guys go for a walk, go get some food. So my husband and I, you know, got our stuff and went for a walk around the block, and I had a few contractions, got some food, came back. She checked me and I was still 5.5 centimeters. I hadn't progressed at all from 10 p.m. the night before, and it was now noon the next day. And I was just like filled with like, what have I been doing the last 12 hours? You know, like what was that all for? I'm so tired. And, you know, and she said again, she's like, she consulted with the other midwife. I was like, we really just don't think it's a good idea to break your water because, you know, you're okay. Which is so different than the hospital, because at that point I probably would have been given some sort of like maybe Pitocin or something to really amp up the contractions and get going. So that was a big difference between those two philosophies. And I, you know, so we started talking about the options that we had, and she was like, you're technically not in labor right now. Like you have not had a contraction in a long time. You're not progressing. So maybe you want to go home. And I was like, I can't go home. We're an hour away. Right. You know, the last thing I want to do is come back in active labor. So there was a hotel next door, and we thought, okay, I guess we'll just check into the hotel and come back when, you know, my contractions are about 5 minutes apart. And we told my mom, you know, go ahead and go home. And when my midwife walked out of the room, she was going to go make another call. I just lost it. Like I just started crying and was like, it was just this huge flood of just exhaustion and frustration. And just like, I didn't want to be away from my daughter any longer than I thought. And I just all of this, you know, sleep deprivation, I just like a flood of emotions and just sort of broke down. And my midwife came back in and was like, okay, why don't we, I'll discharge you, but why don't you just stay here? You're the only person here, you know, take a nap. You're in a space that you've already sort of made comfortable. You don't have to move, just take a nap. And when you wake up, then let's think of a plan. And that was really helpful, because I think just the thought of like packing up and leaving at that point was just really overwhelming. And so I got in bed, and after this like gush of emotion, and I think that was at like maybe around noon, and by 1:30 I was like, oh, okay. So they started coming on a little bit. I remember getting out of bed and like, okay, these are much stronger. I think it was just this release of emotion that really sort of kicked my body into gear. Sure. And I remember at one point, finally, my midwife came in and was like, wow, those sound good. You know, like just so positive. Like, those sound great. Those are so different. And I'm like, yeah, they sound really good. You know, so my husband kind of like secretly started timing them. And I mean, within 20 minutes, they were going. Like it just started, like I was on my hands and knees moaning, just like we were going for it. And I remember being like, call my mom, get her back here.
Right.
And so My poor mom had driven like an hour and then basically had enough time to like, I don't know, drink some water and like had to come turn around. But I remember at one point, you know, so at the birth center too, you had the option to use nitrous oxide.
Okay.
Which I wasn't sure if I had wanted, if I was going to use it or not. I had signed, you have to sign a waiver. So I had signed the waiver just in case. And I remember at one point being like, I want to try it. And so they brought it in and I basically, so if, you know, with nitrous oxide, you have to breathe in through the mask and then you have to breathe out through the mask. So the fumes don't get everyone else all loopy. And so I remember I did it. I used it maybe twice and I hated it. Like it, I felt really claustrophobic, you know, because it was also, it was hard to breathe in and push it back out. And I was realizing just the way my labor was going, I really liked to sort of like moan out my contractions. Sure. And not being able to have that freedom kind of made me claustrophobic. And then I tried to experiment. I was like, maybe if I take a big like inhale in between contractions, it'll last. But that just got me super loopy. And I was like, whoa, I can't be like this right now. So I stopped it. And I kind of remember at that moment when they turned it off in my head being like, okay, this is all you. Like you, there's no other intervention, like you're going to do this all on your own. And I remember asking, can I get in the tub? And they said, well, let's wait a little bit. We don't want it to slow your contractions down. Like you're in such a good rhythm. Let's just wait. And then right after that, I had like a 2-minute contraction. It was a whopper. Like I remember saying like, it's not stopping. And they were like, you can do it. You know, they were rubbing my back. And after that, they checked me and I was 7 centimeters and that was around 4 o'clock. Okay. So this intense active labor had been going on for about an hour and a half, I would say. And so I was 7 centimeters and they said, you know what, we're okay with you getting in the tub. So I got in the tub thinking it was just going to be this rush of relief, but it wasn't. Mm. It was extremely intense. And I remember just feeling like I just couldn't find my footing, but I really was thought back. I remember the state of mind of like, you have to go back to your breathing. Go back to your breathing. You're going to get through this. Inhale, exhale. And I had told my husband, you know, that's what I want from you. I want you to look at me and snap me out of those moments of if I, you know, any type of feeling of defeat. And he was really great and would see those moments and just look at me and just not say anything, but just sort of breathe with me. And I remember at one point just kind of saying like, I think I'm going to collapse. And my midwife was just so calm and matter of fact. And she just said, you're not going to collapse. And it just really was what I needed to hear. And then all of a sudden, like it was totally spontaneous. I just was like, oh my gosh, I'm pushing. I just started spontaneously pushing.
Okay.
I had no control over it. It was such an interesting, crazy experience. And I just like, it's like completely out of body.
Right.
And I was on my hands and knees in the water. And this was at 4:35. I started pushing and then it would stop. And I would just kind of, it was just silent in the room. Like that's what another thing that was so different is everyone was so hands off. Like in a positive way,
sure.
Like I was just on my own. It was like me and my baby. This was our deal. Like we were going to do this together. And then all of a sudden I started pushing again. And I remember just thinking like, oh my gosh, I couldn't stop it because it was just my body was just doing everything on its own. And then his head popped out and no one noticed. So I was like, his head's out.
Right.
And my midwife was like, okay, do you want to still catch the baby? Do you want to still catch him? And I said, yeah. So she sort of helped me position myself. She called it kind of like a runner's pose. Like, you know, when you're getting ready for a race, you're on one
sure.
knee and then you're kind of balancing on your tiptoe
right,
on the other
right,
one.
Right.
And I got in position and it was one more push and he just floated up and I just caught him. And that was at 4:45. So I pushed for 10 minutes. He just kind of floated up and it was just so surreal and amazing. And just, I just sat there in the tub with him and, you know, my mom was right there. My husband was right there and everyone was just kind of gave me that space. And I just sort of like soaked in those few moments.
Right.
And then it was just, yeah, it was just so natural.
Sure.
I don't know. I felt like I laugh now because I was like, I felt like a crazy like lioness. Like I was just
so powerful.
It was just like such a wild, like, yeah, yeah. Totally. So powerful.
Right.
And so they let me kind of sit in the tub for a little bit. And, you know, they sort of helped me so I could look at him and then helped me out of the tub and onto the bed. And on the bed is where I delivered the placenta. And, you know, in the midwifery practice, like, and at the birth center, they keep everything attached for as long as you want. So they put the placenta in a bowl next to me. And kept the cord attached and just immediately, you know, that skin to skin and, you know, starting to kind of try to nurse.
Sure.
And it was just so normal, cool about it was we just went through this profound experience and then we were all just hanging out on the bed. Like,
right.
It was just the most natural thing that had just happened.
Okay. I know it can be stressful wondering about prenatals and whether or not they have all the right ingredients. Well, Ritual takes all the guesswork out of prenatals. Their essential prenatal builds key nutrient levels to support a healthy pregnancy. It includes methylated folate and nature identical choline to support baby's neural tube development. There's omega-3 DHA for brain and early vision development support. And there's vitamin D to support fetal bone health. And as someone who looks at research, I love that Ritual's essential prenatal is backed by science. I also love that all lots are third-party tested for allergens, microbes, and heavy metals. You deserve to know exactly what you're putting into your body, especially when it comes to prenatal multivitamins. And with Ritual's dedication to traceable science and sourcing, you always will. See for yourself with 25% off your first month at ritual.com/Dr. Nicole. Start Ritual or add Essential for Women Prenatal to your subscription today. That's ritual.com/Dr. Nicole for 25% off.
Did you ever at all, and this is like random, just did you ever have any concerns about being in the water and then like bodily fluids in the water or blood or anything like that? Like, did that even cross your mind?
I mean, it didn't cross my mind while I was doing it, but definitely before I was like, oh, God, what if,
I'm
probably going to poop. And it's like, just so, and I kind of had to tell my husband that, like, I don't know what this is going to look like afterwards.
Right.
I should go back. And there was like, I remember actually before I started pushing, there was a pop and that was my water breaking, but I had no idea. I had like forgotten about my water needing to break. So in that moment in my head, I was like, oh my gosh, the water, like you have these moments of coming back to reality. Like, oh, that's going to look gross or whatever.
Right.
So yeah, I definitely had those thoughts.
Gotcha. And was your husband in the pool with you?
No,
he wasn't. Okay.
No one was in there with me. That was an option.
Right.
You know, they said like, they always tell the husbands or the partners to like bring their bathing suits if they want to go in.
Right.
And that wasn't, yeah.
Gotcha. Connor said, I'm just going to support from the side. Very close, but not quite in the water.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. He was supportive from afar.
Yeah. How long did you stay at the birth center after the birth?
4 hours.
Okay.
Yeah. So we got in bed and we had brought a bunch of food and I was very clear, like, I no longer have gestational diabetes. And so, I mean, that was me. Yeah. I was like, so we brought a ton of food. They were so amazing and like warmed it up and put it on plates and like did all this, made it all very nice. And yeah, so we had some food on the bed. We worked on like nursing, got him to latch, and they went through all the newborn care and did all the checks. And, you know, I had to do like one little suture.
How was that to get stitches?
It was fine. She, you know, it hurt to get the, I guess it's lidocaine or whatever. It was just the topical number. So it wasn't too bad. The other thing that was really cool about that like immediate postpartum is they took the placenta and then they just sat on the bed with us and laid the placenta out and like talked to us about it and like showed us everything, which was really cool. It was just kind of fun to be really up close and personal with that.
Yeah. So then you were at the birth center for 4 hours and then.
Yeah. So we were there for about 4-ish hours.
Okay. And then you went back home, I guess. And then when did they see you after that?
So they came to our house 24 hours later and, you know, did a newborn check and weighed him. Mm-hmm. And then they came back again within like the 72 hour point. And then after that, we went back every 2, 4, and 6 weeks to the birth center for postpartum appointments. But it was just so nice. So, like, we never had to leave. It was just, they came to you, which is just really nice to just be able to sort of be in bed and not have to worry about getting your little newborn back in the car.
Yeah. And I take it for your first experience, you didn't have a postpartum check until 6 weeks.
Yeah, that's correct. And I had had a really rough time nursing. And so I had gone back to the hospital to do different consultations. And this time the lactation consultant also came to our house, which was really nice. And so, yeah, it was just sort of this really special time that we could, you know, just be a family. And the other thing too, that I just was throughout my labor, the birth assistant that was there, I just kind of kept noticing like she was typing on her computer and it didn't bother me, but I just remember being like, what is she typing? And everything, like from after the birth, when we're all sitting down, she just kept typing and typing and typing. I was like, what's going on? And then a couple of days after I got home, I logged into my little profile and she had been recording minute by minute, like quotes and all of this, everything that we were saying to each other right when he came out. And so it was so cool. Like, you know, it says like 4:47, Katie says, hey, buddy, you know, and all these things that you just aren't going to remember within those first moments.
Sure.
So that was really special.
That's really wonderful. Yeah. So obviously this sounds like it was a very lovely experience for you.
It was. It was amazing. And the postpartum period was, you know, my body felt really good. I wasn't in very much pain.
How do you feel like the recovery was physically between having a hospital birth and a birth center birth?
For me, it was really night and day. My postpartum with my daughter was really, really hard. I mean, I was super, super sore for almost 8-9 weeks. You know, I just like couldn't really walk around. I just was in a lot of pain. And this birth, I mean, I had to remind myself that I just had a baby. I mean, it was, I don't know if it was the water birth or just sort of all these different, you know, no intervention. I'm not really sure the different position. I gave birth on my hands and knees versus pushing on my back, the spontaneous pushing. There's all these different factors that could have led to it. But it was a really positive postpartum experience. So that's what really, if I were, you know, to have another baby, that was a big green flag doing it again, because I was just able to sort of bounce back.
And did you have stitches with your daughter?
I did. I had a second degree tear with my daughter.
Okay.
And this one I had a first.
Gotcha. Okay. So then as we wrap up, what is your one favorite, what piece of advice would you give to people who are considering having a baby or who are pregnant and having a baby?
Yeah, I would say you might not be able to control your actual birth and your labor, but you can make the prenatal experience and your support team what you want. I think I would just empower people to really listen to their intuition, and you don't have to have a traumatic experience beforehand to decide to change and find another route. I think it's just listen to your body and listen to yourself and trust yourself that you know the path that's best for you.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So then where can women connect with you? You can say nowhere if you're not on social media.
Yeah. I mean, I'm just on Instagram. It's just Katie Hackett or Katie Rowe Hackett is my Instagram.
Okay.
It's just a personal account.
Gotcha. All right. Well, thank you so much for agreeing to come on and share your story.
Yeah.
This was just really, really, really lovely story and really just enlightening for me to think about ways that, like, you know, we just have to reimagine our whole maternal health care system and just, you know, opportunities for us to do better.
Sure. Can I also just say one more thing?
Please. Yeah.
I just want to be, you know, I really did have a positive experience in the hospital too. You know, I don't want to say that my medical experience was terrible. It really wasn't. It just wasn't for me. So I just wanted to just let people know that whatever works for you, works for you.
Thank you. I really appreciate you saying that. It's really about just finding what you think is gonna work best for you to help you have like the best, most like supportive and uplifting and joyful birth experience. Wasn't that a great episode? I appreciate Katie coming on to share her birth center birth experience, and I hope you enjoyed it. Now, you know, after every episode when I have a guest on, I do something called Dr. Nicole's Notes, where I talk about my top takeaways and thoughts from the conversation. Here are my Dr. Nicole's Notes for my conversation with Katie. The first one is that birth should be more than just fine. You know, she said her first birth experience was perfectly okay. There wasn't anything that was particularly terrible about it, but it just wasn't that holistic experience that she was looking for. And so often, I think in the U.S. maternal healthcare system, we look at outcomes for birth. If the mom is alive and baby is alive, then it's like, okay, great. And we really should look for more than that. People deserve to have more than just a fine experience. We want people to have a great experience. Just coming out of birth physically alive is like the absolute bare minimum. We can and must do better than that. Now, along with that is that we have to look at ways to create connection for everyone giving birth. Not everyone is going to be able to give birth in a birth center. There are also going to be instances where you may see different providers during your birth. I mean, the way birth is set up now, very often you're not going to have met the doctor who is there for your birth. And I know that it's, you know, more ideal if you can see the same person during your pregnancy and they're going to be there for your birth, but that's just not the reality of the way it is. I believe that we can create those connections even in the short term. I do that all the time as an OB hospitalist when I come in and meet people just during their birth experience. It does take some work and some challenges, but we have to look at ways to create that connection for everyone giving birth so that they all have that great birth experience. The last thing that I want to put a plug in for is policy and the importance of policy. She says she paid $7,000 out of pocket for this birth center birth, or I think insurance covered part of it. In some places, insurance is not going to cover a birth center birth, even though it can be cheaper. Like an average hospital birth can easily be $20,000. So it doesn't make sense, right? That insurance would cover that, but wouldn't cover a birth center birth that's cheaper. Things like that are going to change with policy. And that means you have to pay attention to what's going on in the law and in the government, both in the federal level and your state level, about policies related to maternal health. It's easy to kind of like not think about things because you have your baby and then the issues of pregnancy care and prenatal care and postpartum don't necessarily affect you anymore. So it kind of goes out of sight, out of mind. And I would challenge everyone that we're all going to have to step up and get involved in order to help bring about that change. Now, obviously, we can't all be involved in every single thing, but pick something that is important to you. And maybe that thing is maternal health. Follow that, pay attention to it, invest some bit of time, maybe even money, in candidates who support the things that are important to you, because it is policy that will ultimately help move the needle for things. The government shouldn't be involved in making choices and decisions for us, but the government should help expand the options that are available to us and help us to have equitable access to options. So that's where policy can really, really be important. Okay, so there you have it. Please share this podcast with a friend. Also, subscribe to the podcast wherever you're listening to me right now. Leave me a review on Apple Podcasts. I'd love to hear what you think about the show. Or you can shoot me a DM on Instagram and let me know what you think about the show as well. I'm on Instagram at Dr. Nicole Rankins. Do come join me in my live birth plan class, Make a Birth Plan the Right Way. Sign up for the next live class at drnicolerankins.com/birth plan. So that's it for this episode. Do come on back next week. And remember that you deserve a beautiful pregnancy and birth.
Save big money on your next project now at Menards. Brighten up your garage or workspaces with LED utility and panel light bulbs from GT Light. GT Light light bulbs are energy efficient, and with their easy adjustable light panels, you can direct light where you need it most. Save big on all GT industrial utility and panel light bulbs. And don't forget to check out our weekly flyer for more hot deals happening now. Save big.